From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Yesterday morning, at about this time, we were anticipating an announcement by Governor Jerry Brown. He did, in fact, announce the signing of a new piece of climate change legislation, Senate Bill 100, which sets a 100% clean electricity goal and a target to reach carbon neutrality by the year 2045. So here's part of yesterday's speech by the governor.
SB 100 is sending a message to California and to the world that we're going to meet the Paris Agreement and we're going to continue down that path to transition our economy to zero carbon emission and to have the resiliency and the sustainability that science tells us we must achieve.
A few hours after that announcement, and in anticipation of the opening of the governor's Climate Action Summit in San Francisco later this week, the governor held many one-on-one interview sessions with reporters. I was among those who spoke to him, and you're going to hear me ask about Miriam Powell's new book on the four generations of the governor's family. I also asked about the First Lady, Ann Gus Brown. But we started with the SB 100 legislation and the governor's bigger vision.
Our goal has to be not only cleaning up the grid and making it 100% zero carbon, but we have to go to the rest of the economy and do the same thing there. And that will require enormous investments, scientific and technological breakthroughs.
The grid legislation not passing this session, was that a step backwards then?
Well, it wasn't a step forward. And eventually, we will need a regional grid to meet the goals of SB 100. It can't be done in a cost-effective way. The grid saves money. The goal has to be renewable energy, reliable electricity supply, and reasonable rates. You need all three, not just one.
Do you think the biggest moves forward in dealing with climate change will come from politics and policy or science and nature?
It's an interaction of the two. Without science coming up with the verified insights and research reports, the political will never be generated. Secondly, nature, by the way of forest fires, floods, cyclones, massive droughts, that is another stimulus to wake up politicians, which on this issue, for the most part, are rather sleepy.
You said the word wildfires. Are utilities necessary? Do we need them to deal with climate change?
Sure, we need somebody. Remember, we're highly electrified. This interview would not go forward if you didn't have access to electricity. So we got to have electricity, and we have wires that stretch from the Canadian border all the way to the Mexican border. And we got a lot of trees around them and brush. And now we have very low humidity and extraordinarily high winds. So there's lots of work to do, not just on the part of our electric utilities, but in warning drivers and other individuals. They have to be very careful when they're in the forest during this hot weather.
Demonstrators are already speaking out in the atmosphere of your summit starting this week. What message do you hear from the demonstrators?
I hear great concern, and I echo that concern. We're on the road to perdition. The Paris Agreement is stalled. Whether you look to Europe or the United States or even to California, we're not doing enough. We have a plan that's embodied in what is called the scoping plan put out by the California Air Resources Board. It aims to cut our oil use by almost 50%. It intends to bring our grid to renewable energy at least 60% by 2032. These are very important plans. They're detailed. They take into account cars, refineries, forests, dairies, cement business, a whole range of activities. All of those elements must be part of an overall plan. Some of the demonstrators are more focused on some oil drilling. That is one element, but there's 100 different pieces to our overall plan. This plan has been worked out. I feel confident in it, but I'm also confident that every year it will be reviewed and renewed and ultimately modified till we get to the goal.
A man named Rafe Pomerantz in the late 70s was looking at the information about coal and acid rain. and he started advancing this information. It got to George H.W. Bush and the possibility of something happening there. And then the way I've heard the story, John Sununu, as chief of staff, was the one who stopped it. Do you know that history? And what would prevent us from being in a situation where that thwarting history would repeat itself?
Well, I know the history somewhat because I was at the global summit in Rio de Janeiro, where President Bush was also at just before Bill Clinton became the president. And the countries of the world signed and created the framework on climate change, which continues as the basic juridical framework of dealing with global warming. So that was a positive, but unfortunately, we are in a culture and an economy that is totally dependent on oil, gas, and coal. That is the essence of modernity. We are saying we now have to get off it. We have to transform ourselves. That's very daunting. And it takes a lot of imagination, a lot of political will, a lot of science, a lot of technology, and a lot of money. So I think some of these people looked and they blinked. But with the succeeding years, we now know the forest fires, the floods, the hurricanes, the mudslides, we have to do more. And I think people are starting to do more. The only question is it in time? Are we in time? And that's a real open question. But by SB 100, we've taken an important next step.
Can I ask you about Miriam's book?
Yeah.
What do you think of the book?
I think it's interesting. It's about my family and forebears. So I find she dug up a lot of stuff that I didn't even know about. So yeah, it's interesting.
Is there a possibility you might appoint your wife to the California Supreme Court?
No. She'd be the best appointment. I have no doubt about that. Of all the candidates, she's number one. But she has some important work to do on the ranch with me. We have a lot of olive trees to take care of. We have a lot of trails to build. We have a lot of building to restore the real legacy, which is the legacy of my great-grandfather, who took up residence in this particular place in Northern California in the summer of 1878. Same year my grandmother was born.
If President Trump is reelected in 2020, what does the world look like by 2024?
If President Trump is elected, that says something very dark about the election, about where we are in America and where the world's going. So I fervently hope and pray that does not happen. We need to make the shift, and Trump has adopted, to quote him, a lot of fake moves, and not only fake, but dangerous. So we need to get into a new leadership, and he's not it.
We're having a little trouble locking in a gubernatorial debate for your successor. How important is a debate for people, and how accessible do you think you've been to the media?
Well, I think I'm accessible, but, you know, the media is insatiable. So you have to keep them within bounds. I think the debates are fine. I've always had a number of debates. But, you know, each of the candidates have to figure out what they do about that. There's a lot of media. There's a lot of exposure. Today, if anything, we have more exposure than we need, not the reverse.
More exposure than we need. Governor Jerry Brown talking with me yesterday in his office at the Capitol. As soon as we were done, by the way, someone opened the door and Calusa, the Brown's dog, came bouncing into the room. I clicked a few pictures with my phone. The tweets of those pictures have been very popular. You can check them out at Cap Radio Ruyak. Thanks to the governor and his staff who stretched my 8-minute window to 10.5. Every few seconds counts, right? Also, thanks to Mark Jones, who recorded the interview for us. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.